Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast. My name is Hakun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time. And with me, as always, is senior staff writer and co-host Ryan Whitfield. So tell me, Ryan, how are you doing today about this entire Julian Edelman news about facing a four-game suspension for violating the league's PED policy, which he is currently appealing? Tell me, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, as I intimated to you in the pre-show talk that we were doing there, I think it actually might be a good thing. Julian Edelman has a very hard time staying healthy on the field for 16 weeks. So you get through the first 4 weeks without him. The Patriots have proved they can go 2-2 and still be at 12-14. So you get through those four games, and then you get him back, and hopefully he can make a run all the way to the Super Bowl. Because when he's been a starter, because I don't count 2011, he hadn't emerged yet. And last year is obviously out. When he's been a starter, they're 2-0 in the Super Bowl. So it could benefit the Patriots as far as the whole cheating scandal or aspect of it. You know, I'm under the belief after Ray Lewis grew back a limb in 2012 that pretty much every player in the NFL is on something. But this is on him to cover it up better. You got to be better at it. You got to do it. You got to do it, dude. Right. You know, you can't be out there. you got to have a better masking agent. That's on Julian for not being good enough at cheating. So I blame him for
this. Spoken like a true Pats fan. Not good enough at cheating, Julian. You got to get somebody else. So he's theoretically he's going to forfeit about $470,000 in base salary if his four-game suspension is upheld. He is actually appealing it at this moment. The first four games of the season: Houston, Jacksonville, Detroit, and Miami. I suspect that Houston will actually be better than we think this year. Jacksonville, always a solid defense. Detroit, 50-50. Miami, I think you should be able to take care of without him. So, yeah, this is going to be a really interesting road for the Patriots. I actually think this actually really helps Chris Hogan. I think it helps actually Sony Michel. I honestly think that there's a lot more opportunity about a proven slot receiver there to get dump it off to the running back. So, yeah, I think this actually could be good. But the other aspect of this is the entire Alex Guerrero thing. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think there's any connection to Alex Guerrero, him, Edelman, being a Guerrero guy?
I'm not a Guerrero fan, and so this is not coming from the Patriot bias standpoint. It just, their whole thing is about not lifting weights and about pliability and flexibility. And so it's like, to me, it's like doing, like a yoga master, asking you to do steroids. It's just like philosophically, that's what I'm looking for. Philosophically, doesn't make a lot of sense. So, I think it's more likely that he was frustrated during his comeback and was trying to get healthier, better, quicker. He was doing the PB12 stuff. He said, yeah, this stuff's all great, but my ankle's not healed, or my ACL's not healed, rather. Then what good am I going to be? So, no, I'm gonna go out and do some juice on the side, and then I'll come back and be ready to do all this whole flexible crap you guys are trying to do after that. So I think it's more likely it's not connected, but then again, this is the same guy who came out with concussion water and the cure for cancer and diabetes. So, I don't put anything past the world.
That is true. So we'll see how it all lines up. So, and keep it tuned in. We'll keep you updated on what's going on there, and we'll give you some tips on how to cover that for all you guys who are playing fantasy football as well. But until then, let's go ahead and get rolling. So the first thing I want to talk about today, and the one thing that was basically on our radar, is this entire game day foods debate, which I know Ryan kind of made it a big issue at the beginning of the week when he kind of premiered that this will be a new segment for us, in which we're going to be talking about all the wonderful game day foods we stuff our faces with and which ones we prefer. And I know he got some shout outs from some listeners and followers. You want to give those shout outs first?
Yeah, quickly. I think that this is a good time of year to do this. It's kind of the doldrums of the NFL offseason. We'll go back to OTAs next week before training camp really is going to ramp up here at the end of or in next month. So, a couple of shout outs from the Twitter guys, because I put out this poll on Twitter, this open question on Twitter. And so at the Fantasy Headliners came at us with deep fried Philly cheesesteak rolls, which I cannot say that I've ever had. But it does sound delicious. I'm going to skip over the next one I had written down and go to that one's my favorite, I think. So I'm going to wait till the end.
Okay.
At Beerfield FF, which are the boys from Beerfield Fantasy who we've had on the show multiple times,
Yeah.
They put out beer brats and buck chick dip. At Pyro Stag came at us with fried mac and cheese. Now, I don't know if those are fried mac and cheese balls, but if they are, then I am a big fan, although can't say that I've ever gone through the work to put that together on a game day. At The Loaded Box gave us a top five list for them. They came out with meatballs, buff chick dip, pizza, potato skins, and buff wings. And then the last one, which is the one I thought was the most interesting because I had never heard of it, and I'm definitely trying it this year, at Thurry BFF, who's Dan Thurry from the Beer Fueled Fantasy Show, had little smokies, he called them, which I guess are just like the miniature little, you know, pigs in a blanket style hot dogs.
Okay.
Basically made in like a crock pot with barbecue sauce. So
okay.
I will be adding that to the menu this football season. So I'm looking forward to
it. Yeah, no doubt. I definitely got to try that. I mean, it was kind of funny. Those guys, Beer Fueled Fantasy, actually talking about brats because, you know, that's kind of a Midwest thing. And I'm actually from the Midwest. I love brats. But, you know, you coming out here east, people don't do brats that often. Not the type of brats you get from Wisconsin. So kudos to them for bringing that up. Like, why don't you give us, you know, we had a top five lined up. So, you know, why don't you walk through your top five? And I'm actually going to do a little spin on mine because I'm going to talk about ones that I've had at stadiums and ones that I've recreated at home based on ones I've had at stadiums. So why don't you fire away?
Okay, so I'll start at number five and I'll work my way down through obviously the most boring to the best. Number five is boring, but also very important, especially if you're having people over. I like a good crackers, cheese, and real pepperoni platter. And by the real pepperoni, I'm talking the kind you actually have to cut, not the kind that comes in the Hormel bag, which is all pre-sliced. I'm talking that real big, you know, stick of pepperoni that you got to cut yourself. That's my number five. My number four, oh, sorry. You want to chime in?
No. Go ahead. Yeah, go through your five because my list is going to sound weird compared to yours.
Okay. So my number four is a little bit boring, but a staple, and that would be pizza, just a good old fashioned pizza on game day.
No doubt.
Number three would be, and I'm drawing a blank. Oh, just buffalo wings. I know that's one on the list.
Winner all the way around.
But obviously, buffalo wings. Obviously, number three. Which is what I just did. So number two is loaded chicken nachos, which I make homemade, which are fantastic. And then number one, which is my absolute favorite, I got to start prepping it the night before, but a good old-fashioned pulled barbecue chicken sandwich with a little coleslaw on it.
Oh, nice. Nice. I like that. That sounds delicious. So let me give you – so this is – I did mine a little different than yours because what I did was foods that I ate at NFL stadiums – that I really liked or that friends of mine who went to particularly notable NFL stadiums particularly liked and was like, oh, you got to talk about this. So number five, and I haven't had this one myself, but a good friend of mine went to Super Bowl 50 a couple of years ago when the Broncos beat the Panthers. And there at Levi Stadium, they actually serve a crab sandwich, which is fresh crab salad served in a toasted sourdough, garlic bread, sliced tomato. He sent me a picture. It looks fantastic. So, you know, hats off to you, my friend. That was actually looked great. If I actually get out there, I'm going to definitely give that a shot. At number four, and I had this last year when I was at the Los Angeles Coliseum to watch a Rams-Seahawks game, is the Mexican street corn. They had this grilled chile elote. It's basically an ear of grilled corn seasoned with chili powder, lime, and cotija cheese. It is fantastic, and you don't need any utensils to eat it. You just kind of, you know, chow away. It's perfect for eating in a stadium, except for if you do,
fantastic,
if you're like me, and you drop it on yourself, because then it makes a freaking mess, dude. I mean, like, I was covered in, like butter and cheese and chili powder. It's not pleasant in the hot Los Angeles sun. So be careful if you're going to eat those things. Hold on to them, man. They slip right out of your hand. Number three, and this is a friend of mine who grew up in Pittsburgh, Heinz Field fan, Pittsburgh Steelers fan. He suggested the pierogies at the Pittsburgh Pierogi House, Section 119. It comes in three different forms because there's a very traditional Polish community there in Pittsburgh, so there's a lot of influence there. And they have traditional, they have what's called Mexican War Streets in a Bloomfield, which is spicy salsa verde and vodka sauce. So sounds really delicious. I'll give that a shot if I ever get down there.
I got to tell you, pierogies are one of the most underrated food items in the world.
Oh, yeah?
People do not give pierogies enough respect. Love pierogies.
Oh, sweet. Now, see, now, I love that's a glowing. That is a glowing. That you know, now I feel like I have to. Now I feel like I have to go get some pierogies because I actually never had a pierogi before. So this is big news for me. I actually really am excited about the prospect of actually, you know, actually getting pierogies and then and trying them out, because of the fact that I love pasta and I love cheese and I love potato, which I, from what I understand, is basically pierogies. So that,
yep,
sounds,
you just
that sounds awesome.
It. 1, 2, and 3.
Right. And then kielbasa is the other thing that they have there. So I, you know, I'm going to put that on my list as well. So I'm pretty interested in all those things. You know, I'm a little bit unsure, like, you know, if I'm really on board with doing both of those things, it might be a really, really tough day for me there if I try to eat both of those. But I will definitely give that a shot. Number two is one I've had many, many, many times. It's the Italian sausage and peppers. I'm going to talk about the one at MetLife Stadium only because of the fact that's the one I have the most often. And there is a particularly big, you know, Italian community in the New York area. So Giants and Jets games, loaded, sauteed onions, peppers, charred vegetables falling off the side. And they also have what's called, at Jets games only, they have what's called the Jumbo Jet Sausage, 24 inches of pure cholesterol for $50. So there you go. That's some good stuff right there. And my number one, and I it hurts me to say this because it's from my most hated team, but Lambeau Field at the Green Bay Packers, they sell something called the Lamb Bowl. And the Lamb Bowl contains 3 pounds of sausage, different types, like 4 different types of sausage, 3 pounds of sausage cut up, cheese curds, bacon, tater tots, Leinenkugel's Bavarian Dunkel beer cheese, and red cherry peppers. That is freaking amazing. $10 of a souvenir bowl, man. That was like, even though I hated every second of enjoying that, I really, really enjoyed that. My heart probably didn't enjoy that, but I really enjoyed that.
Absolutely, I did not.
And I'll give one more honorable mention here. The honorable mention, and this is not from an NFL stadium. This is actually from the Atlanta Braves Stadium, Turner Field, before they moved to SunTrust Stadium. And this was back in 2016. They had what's called the Burgerizza. The Burgerizza is $26. It's a grilled 20-ounce all-beef patty covered with 5 slices of cheddar cheese, topped with bacon, and served between two 8-inch pepperoni pizzas. And there you go. That one, wow. Honorable mention right there. Not an NFL game day food, but if I can make that for myself, I might not make it past game day, honestly. So that's my
yeah,
foods right there.
Game day foods are not recommended by your local
cardiologist.
physician. There we go. That's the word.
Right, right.
While trying to talk is really just a bad combo for me right now. But I'm gonna keep trying to power my way through it.
You're telling me. I was really suffering at the last one. I don't know if you noticed that I started repeating myself because I couldn't figure out which wide receiver I wanted.
I saw the clock ticking down. You're about 2 seconds left before you pulled the trigger there.
I know.
So let's
let everybody in on what we're doing here, because I know everyone knows that we're doing this, but I'm going to ring the bell on this segment. And let's tell them, let's give them a little background music, because, you know, this is exciting stuff here. So we are doing a live draft as we speak. In fact, we've been doing it for the last about 10 minutes now, 13, 14 minutes actually. We're already in the sixth round, and what we're doing is a 12-team best ball league on draft.com. So for all those who are unfamiliar with these types of leagues, best ball means you don't have to set a lineup. Basically, it's your best quarterback, your best 2 running backs, best 3 wide receivers, and your best tight end scores each week in a half PPR format, and you have 18 total players. The catch is, there is nothing you can do once you've drafted. There is no pickups, no waiver wire trades, no nothing. Basically, you draft and you guys get injured, tough luck. You hope you have some backups. And that's the way it's played. So it's really, really important that you do a good job during your draft, which is why it's really funny, because we've been doing that while talking about food over the last 15 minutes. And we are now into the sixth round. So, you know, what are your things? What are your takeaways so far, Ryan, on what we've done so far in this draft?
Yeah, I mean, my big takeaway that I've caught in pretty much I've done a bunch of I've started to switch over to mocks, because I got so addicted on draft. I have about 13 $1 leagues already drafted. So I took a
wow.
little break and started doing some mock drafts to get a little more prep for the regular fantasy football season. But
yeah.
The overall theme here is get your running backs early. It is insane how quickly running backs are flying off the board. So for instance, you know, any draft I've been in where it's a standard, you know, snakes draft setup where I'm picking at the back half of the first round.
Yep.
You know, I'm taking, you know, I actually posted up on Twitter at Ryan Whitfield NE, by the way, this last week, and I had a lot of feedback yesterday on or 2 days ago on a mock draft I did where I had to take Dalvin Cook as the number one back for me. And I'm not kidding you, at number 10, he was the best option. Now, I was at number 11 in this draft, and somehow Leonard Fournette was still there, but that was the best option on the board. And so you're really looking at young kids because the staple guys that you, the names you know, the running backs are going 1, 2, 3, 4. I've seen very few drafts where Antonio Brown's even cracked the top four. It is pretty much across the board. Gurley, Zeke, David Johnson, and why am I forgetting the fourth guy who's going up at the top?
I guess Hunt does come up really early, but I think that you'll probably find Gurley, Bell, Johnson, Elliott, Kamara.
So in this draft, Kamara went fifth, then Antonio Brown comes off the board, then someone comes after Saquon Barkley, and then Kareem Hunt. I mean, six out of the first seven picks are going as running backs, as you can tell. I'm trying to scroll back to find my spot before my pick comes up. It's just, the running backs are flying off early, so you gotta get running backs. I would have some running back sleepers, which I have an interesting theory on, which I will get to towards the end of the show. But you'd want to have some of those guys lined up and ready to go. And then, receiver, on the other hand, 1 through 30 in receivers pretty loaded, but then there's a huge cliff after the 30th guy goes off the board for receivers.
Yeah.
And it's really digging to the dumps. So, more than ever, there's finally a resurgence of quarterbacks. So I would say the overall theory this year is load up on running backs early, in the late early rounds into the middle rounds, hammer wide receivers, and obviously taking, best available. Don't jump over, like in my case, back at pick 14, there was basically another, couple of mediocre, average running backs, but there was still Julio Jones sitting there. So you grab somebody like that and then try to build out your depth after that. But you definitely want to hold off on quarterbacks to the late rounds, the late mid rounds in this year's draft.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely true. And actually, I had the first pick in this draft, and I took Todd Gurley number one. But then when I came around to the swing, I took Mike Evans, who I thought was the best wide receiver available at that spot. And then, I was kind of stuck in a conundrum. I could take like a second, third tier, stretching flex type running back, or take another top wide receiver, or take Travis Kelce. And I just kind of felt like tight end is actually not that deep this year. I mean, and in best ball, you can definitely wait longer. And I wholeheartedly say that if you want to wait on tight end in best ball, feel free to grab three kind of flyers at the end, things like, Mike Gesicki, and things like that. I mean, I have no problems of doing something like that. David Joku, Trey Burton, even Charles Clay, Jared Cook go really late. Any of those guys, I totally wholeheartedly think that that's a fine strategy. But I've actually been leaning towards taking one of the top, six, seven, eight tight ends, and then taking just one tight end to kind of cover my bye week. And if I feel like it at the end, taking the flyer on someone like a Mike Gesicki or a Hayden Hurst or someone like that, but really kind of keeping it at two tight ends, one premium starter. How do you feel about the tight end? I kind of feel like the Hunter Henry thing kind of shook things up a little bit.
It definitely did. I mean, it's one of those situations that there's really only two elite guys now, right? I think Hunter Henry had a chance to break into that class, but I don't think anybody else is in the Gronk or Kelce class. Hold on. I'm going to pull the trigger here.
There you go. Chris Thompson, folks, at number eight, at the eighth round.
But I just did it at the end of the seventh round where I took Rudolph. Because, and that was actually kind of a late breaking opinion because I was doing some digging today. I believe it was me and a kid named Andrew Erickson, who you can find on Twitter. I can, I'll tag him in one of the promos after the show. So we can go find him. He's a data analyst over at Pro Football Focus and does a bunch of fantasy football sites, and a kid that I'm kind of working or in kind of a group with now of fantasy people putting out a bunch of tweets every week. Really great follow, great insight. But he was talking about Kirk Cousins only throwing three red zone touchdowns last year, but that his weapons this year were better than he had ever had. And so I went particularly dug into the red zone numbers. And I got to tell you, I was surprised to find this, but in the red zone last year with Case Keenum at the helm, we saw 16 targets for 14 receptions and 6 touchdowns was the stat line for Kyle Rudolph. So Kyle Rudolph sitting there in the seventh round at a weak position and a man that can produce in the red zone and a guy who's probably going to be pretty thankful to finally have somebody with some size in the red zone.
Yep.
I think that's a great option. And also I think people know Stephon Diggs is not a great red zone option because of his size, and he's more of an outside guy. So he's more of the stretch the field kind of player. But Adam Thielen was actually, I think he was like tied for fifth, or he was in the top 10, or he might have been ninth or eighth. He was a little lower, but he's top 10 in targets in the red zone last year. His stat line, he had, I believe it was 17 targets, so just one more than Rudolph. He had 17 targets, only five completions, and I think he had two or three touchdowns. So he was targeted a bunch, but he just didn't perform well in the red zone. So they don't really have another. I mean, Dalvin Cook's going to be an added weapon they didn't have in the red zone last year. But Kyle Rudolph, if you're looking for somebody that isn't just strictly touchdown dependent, but that you can also rely on to get you some touchdowns if you don't want to go early on a tight end with Gronk or Kelce, Rudolph's a good guy to grab late. So overall, yeah, I agree. The tight end is an important position right now. Just stacking up your depth. And this is the one league I also put out a poll on this. I don't know if you saw this. This week, but I put out a poll on handcuffing running backs, and I will tell you that best ball is the only league I don't hate doing it in, and I still am against like true handcuffing personally. But I do have Geis and Chris Thompson on my roster, hedging my bets a little bit, but also hoping that's a kind of a situation where they both do enough different things that it's not a true Geis sitting behind Chris Thompson, that they're both filling different roles in that offense and both be productive this year.
Right, right. And so I'll just note for the listeners that Julian Edelman, with the new news, still went in the eighth round of the draft, 12-team draft.
Too early.
I think that's probably about right. How do you feel about the eighth round for Julian Edelman?
I'd let him fall to like the ninth or tenth. I had a chance at him in the eighth round, and I said, you know, I have that late turn, you know, the 11th, 15, the 35, 38 turn like that. So I didn't pick him at the beginning of the eighth round. I said, hey, if he's there at the end of the ninth round, I'll take a swing at him. But missing four games is no small shake. I mean, in a format like this, you might be able to ride it out because, you know, you'll have other guys step up earlier. But, you know, for me, I still would have liked to at least want one, you know, another like 10 or so picks to come off the board before him. But this has been a weird draft. I don't know if you've been paying attention. There's been some weird – I mean, I took Deion Lewis at pick 59, and I know he's in a new offense, but somebody five picks ahead of me went down the board and snagged Marlon Mack, who hasn't proved a damn thing yet, ahead of Deion Lewis, who's a proven commodity. And that seems really bold to take Marlon Mack about 40 picks before his ADP right now, just to take him. So
I also thought that it was – I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff going on here. I mean, first of all, people are really, really, really reaching for running back. They're not following, any – I think they're kind of just going for whatever they feel most comfortable with. And then I'll just note also for the listeners, ninth round is suddenly a run on tight ends here, which is interesting. And over the end of the eighth to the beginning of the ninth, there was six quarterbacks drafted. So that kind of suddenly went fast. And I actually drafted Tom Brady at the end of the last pick of the eighth round, which is something I haven't done in many drafts because he hasn't fallen that far. I found that some people will still take him, and he is probably one of the top three quarterbacks for sure in this format. And people have been taking him much earlier than that. So when he got to that point, I typically don't take a quarterback till round 10, but I made an exception this time around because it's Tom Brady. So if he's there at eight, I just figured I'd have to take him. But I can tell you this, I hate my running backs. Right. I mean, like I took Todd Gurley number one. I waited for a while to take another running back until about round seven or round six and seven. And I ended up with Jamal Williams and Marshawn Lynch. You know, so I don't feel great about that at all. And my wide receivers also, I mean, I feel better about them. So taking Travis Kelce at number three at the third round really did have a little bit of an impact on the rest of my lineup. You know, I really felt like that definitely negatively impacted my running back depth for sure. Like if I had to go back and do it again in a 12-team league, maybe I would have passed on Kelce. It's just so enticing in the third round.
Yeah, I mean, I think I listened to myself back on the Beer Field Fantasy the other day, and I start way too many sentences on podcasts saying "yeah, I mean." So that's a pick I'm trying to work on, and I've done it twice in this one, and it's
your catchphrase, man.
Yeah, God. I agree that, you know, it definitely has an effect. I mean, every pick you have is going to have a residual effect, right? But I don't hate the move. I'm looking right now. Is he going to still be there? I'm going to roll the dice. it's my like 10th MFL draft, so I'm going to roll the dice that there's no discipline for Robbie Anderson and snag him.
Look at that, Robbie Anderson on the 10th round. That's not bad. I have no problems with that.
I mean,
I can tell you this though. When I drafted Jamal Williams at the front, I actually was hoping to get Aaron Jones as well. I was really trying to get the total Packers backfield, but then Aaron Jones got sniped in the ninth before my turn came around. So that kind of what I probably should have done if I really wanted it was at the turn take both Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones together, which is why
I was going to say
I took Marshawn Lynch, but I should have taken Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones together because then at least I knew I had the Packers backfield.
Well, you don't have Ty Montgomery though, so you got to watch out for that. But
right. No, I don't think
this is the running back fallout. I mean, this is getting to the point where it's getting really frustrating. This is always the point of the year where I get high on a running back that is going under the radar. And last year with Alvin Kamara was like the first time that his name really didn't ever catch fire. But the Kerryon Johnson thing right now, somebody took Kerryon Johnson in the 7th round.
I know. I saw that.
That's absurd. And I'm high on Kerryon Johnson. I'm high on him as a, and I think the guy JJ from, God, I'm going to forget what it is now, but I referenced him multiple times in this poll I did the other day. But he has a theory that to be a breakout star, the way he measures it, is that you have to fall outside the top 100 and then outperform your preseason point projection by 100 points. And I think Kerryon Johnson can be that, except for ever since he came out with that podcast, I think a lot of people listened to it, because now Kerryon Johnson all of a sudden went from like an ADP of 180 when we were doing this, when we did that big league or multiple people, with the Beer Fuel Fantasy guys, NFL Talking Heads, all those shows, we all did that draft. He was 180. Now he's going. Now I see in like mock drafts on Yahoo's in like the 90 range, and then he went up 70 in this one. So apparently, too many people are on Kerryon Johnson now, and I do not like him at a value in the 7th round at all. So, but people are desperate for running backs right now, so everyone's grabbing anybody they can.
And to that in a testament to that, I just took Deontay Foreman at the end of the 10th round, which I would never do in a regular draft. I'm just telling you all right now, I would never do that in a regular draft. That just stinks. and I'm gonna do something else I never do in a regular draft. I'm not happy about how this is turning out right now. I feel good about right now about my tight end, my first running back, and Tom Brady. That's basically it. Tom Brady, Todd Gurley, Travis Kelce, and everything else is just details. really horrible. This is what happens, though, with a 30-second draft, you know? I mean, like, you don't have a lot of time to really plan this stuff out.
No, and certainly for me, I have my show notes in front of me, not my charts or anything like that. I don't have any of my preset list that I carry on with me. So I'm literally drafting off the fly right now, just taking the 30 seconds to scroll down over the next like 20, 25 names and then pull the trigger and then just hope but again, it's a $1 buy-in league. So
you go do a little bit of experimenting and you kind of figure out where everybody goes. You know, one guy I like now, this is interesting because he actually was drafted a little bit earlier. But I actually like Tyler Eifert as a value this year. I'm trying to see where he went. I think he went pretty early in this draft, I think. Did he go before you picked Randolph?
He might have. I can't remember the last time I saw his name on the list.
Yeah, me neither. But the fact of the matter is that I kind of like – oh, there he is. He just went a couple picks ago. So it was in the 11th round. Tyler Eifert. If you're going to go for that late round, you know, wait for it. Tyler Eifert and then pairing him with somebody like David Joku and Hayden Hurst or Mike Gesicki, I like that strategy. That's not so bad. I mean, I think I could really do that. All right. Well, hey, unfortunately for our listeners, we're only in the 11th round, but we only got 60 seconds left in our podcast. So hopefully you guys got a little bit out of this. We will we'll go ahead and post up the results after we're done. I'm going to try and capture this entire draft somehow. Let's see what I can do that. But so why don't you give us your social media there, Ryan, so people can follow you.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram, football_garbage_time. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, @RyanWhitfieldNE. I'm doing daily fantasy polls at this point. And check out my boys at DraftingSleepers.com, the social network for fantasy sports. And check out my boy @Chris_ADF1 from All Day Football for the most comprehensive football and fantasy football analysis online.
Yeah, and check out Ryan's series on the AFC East. He's done a really nice job breaking down their draft picks. There's one more part coming. Check out the first three parts. It's really, really good stuff. And you can follow me at FB Garbage Time. And, hey, we'll be back next week. We got much more information for you. Be sure to check back on our site. We'll post up the results of our draft. We are happy to answer your questions on any of your draft needs as well. Until next time, enjoy your NFL week.
And I'll pull up another crazy poll with some kind of food question or something like that for next week as well. So make sure you guys give your feedback on that.
I do love food.